Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
It's time for the church to acknowledge that we have brothers and sisters who are gay.
LGBTs have to find a household of worship that reflects what your views are and what you believe.
A gay person who still wants to attend church after the way the church has treated the gay community, I'm telling you, they have more faith than I do. They have more faith than a lot of you.
What's not loving is to look someone in the eye when God says they are in jeopardy of an eternity in hell and merely wink and nod at their sin because you're afraid of being called names.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Round one. You be the judge.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Order in the court.
This is Wretched Radio. Prepare. Ooh, this is a good one. Prepare to play one of America's fastest growing game sensations. Well, this one is so good that sometimes I confuse it with the name of the other one that we do here. That how's about them liberals? There we go. How's about them liberals? That's the name of this game show. And as always, your federal head, whether you like it or not, representing the tens and tens of people listening to this here Wretched Radio program, the one, thankfully only, Jimmy Hicks. Are you prepared for your most onerous responsibility, sir?
Any day I get to judge is a good day, but a day I get to judge liberals,
That warms you up, does it?
It does.
Which actually is kind of in line with what we are going to consider for a moment, and I must make a confession. A number of years ago, I thought to myself, self, because I have this sort of inner dialogue going on all the time, I'm never lonely. Self, what if we stopped speaking in hushed tones about the things that we think are either evil or even that we think are just culturally bad for people? What if when we're in public, we were just not like, okay, so we don't want to talk about this because a liberal might hear it and we could be shamed for it. If instead we just labeled things for what they are, not to be snarky, not to be condescending, not to be cruel, but to simply be salt and light that doesn't just let liberal progressivism just wash over us. And I'm thinking politically, culturally, and theologically, what if? And so it is when I heard this little snippet from the President of the United States with a reporter who was wearing a mask in the Oval Office. I thought, okay, he's doing that, Friel. The very thing that I wish that we would do, it appears that Donald Trump just did. You say, what does that have to do with you be the judge? The question is, should we be talking like this to unbelievers? Do we have permission, biblical permission, to utilize what I think can only be described as dripping sarcasm to this degree? When we read through the Gospels, it's really fascinating how somebody's presupposition informs their Bible usage, how we go find the stories that support what our emphasis happens to be. But if you look at the totality of Jesus speaking, you see a wide range. You see, I think, a wide range of tone. I think you hear a wide range of words. I think you even hear a range of sarcasm. You hear a range of humor to expose fallacy. And my conclusion to that is, okay, it's not just we always have to speak like this in every single situation, or we can never speak like that. I think we're given biblical permission to have a range. Now, whether you agree or disagree with that, if it is true that we do indeed, as believers, have a little wiggle room where we go, you know what, I wouldn't do it that way, but I'm not going to judge that brother for talking that way because it is within the biblical spectrum of permitted speech. This is going to be a test. Is this particular speech acceptable biblically? Jimmy, you ready? I have a confession to make.
Okay.
I kind of delighted in this. I have to admit. I kind of was like, I'm enjoying this, but I have to put my enjoyment aside and say, can we talk like this.
California, we're put in place education
policy. You know, I haven't seen a mask in so long. You're wearing a mask. So nice of you. I haven't seen anybody wearing a mask in a long time. It's good.
Oh, man. And it, he's a better actor than I thought. That was cold as ice. Yeah. That was just downright chilly.
You feel more comfortable, right? Good. That's good.
Yeah, that's good. So carry on with your question. Oh, I think the term that they're using on the internet is he trolled her. Mm. Jimmy, you're representing tens and tens of people. Is Donald Trump's words to this reporter wearing a mask in the Oval Office within the range of acceptable Christian speech?
I think maybe. I don't think I have a direct answer. You can definitely hear the sarcasm and irony in his voice. And I think if it's done to make you aware, you know, kind of realize where you're at and not humiliate you.
I think I share that hesitation because I would ask the question, all right, and this is the question. I'm not just asking this of Donald Trump. This is the question we need to ask ourselves before we speak up in a critical way. What am I driving for here? What am I going for here? Right. Now, it seems to me there could have been, I don't know the man's heart, but I think we can imagine some motives for trolling somebody like that. Number one would be to make fun of that person, most likely a liberal. We know for sure I can't see the video. If the reporter had purple hair, then that would be the confirmation we need that this is an individual who's a liberal. So he wants to make fun of a liberal. It could be that he's trying to speak to a demographic that thinks that masks are preposterous to show, hey, I'm on your team. All right. I don't know, but I think the crucial question is, what am I going for here? And personally, in this instance, as much as I have to confess my cold conservative heart gets a little bit of warmth from it, I don't think that calling somebody out to bring attention to them as being what he perceives to be kind of ridiculous has enough redemptive value to it. Now, could you speak in tones like that if you were engaging somebody trying to make a point and maybe not being as pointed with your critique of the person and more of the worldview? Yeah, I think that there's a range, and I think that Jesus modeled that. He most certainly modeled this. He spoke tenderly to those who were receptive and respectful. He spoke lovingly to everyone, but he also spoke sharply. Yes, he did use sarcasm. Yes, he did use humor to expose what? Not the individual as being kind of dopey, but to point out bad theology, work righteousness, pride, revealing that your lips say good things about me, but your hearts are far from me. Those are the things that motivated him. Jesus was relentless in it. Well, at least with two issues. Number one, theology and making sure that people understood the word rightly. This is really what Moses said. I'm telling you, and defending truth. He was tenacious about that. Okay, a second one, and maybe you've even got a third one. A second one would be revealing and exposing. I'm not looking for religiosity. I'm not looking for systems. I'm not looking for tassels and phylacteries and phoniness. It's not what I want. I want the heart. And so in an effort to reveal and expose that, he spoke strongly, even used sarcasm. I think the third thing, if you will, that Jesus was about was the salvation of souls. I think this is so key. I think we maybe talked about this earlier this week, last week, that when Jesus was really dropping the bomb on the Pharisees, it was in the context of Jerusalem, Jerusalem. I wanted to save you. And so in an effort to either defend truth, expose hypocrisy, or to see somebody saved, those are the motives that should drive us. And then once we've established our motive, I think that will control how it is that we use the tongue. We have permission to use sarcasm, but is it in service to those goals? Or is it something else? I think that that's the principle that will guide us. And I would say this right now, that for the most, maybe it's changing a little bit in our culture, but I would say that we probably as evangelicals, maybe because of the political correctness pressure that we feel, you know, maybe because of just the CRT that says, oh, you can't be speak like that because that makes you a fill in the blank phobe or a whatever gist that you they claim that you are, then maybe we actually do need to speak a little bit more forcefully in this time. Again, there's a range and it depends on the circumstance. The motive has to drive it. But what if we were truth speakers? Okay, so for instance, you go to the whatever the deli is to get a sandwich and the woman behind the counter is wearing a mask. I could say the exact same thing that Donald Trump said. You're wearing a mask. I haven't seen. Well, look at you. Does that make, do you feel safe? Okay, could do that. I'd probably have some concerns. There's going to be spit in my sandwich. But could I engage her to say, hey, I'm so curious. We don't see masks anymore. What is there a reason that you're wearing a mask? And then whatever the answer is, kind of irrelevant for our sake, but that would be to at least try to figure it out, to maybe find an open door, to see what is motivating somebody to live in fear like that. Do I think we should confront? Yeah, more than we have been. But I think it needs to be guided by the same motives that Jesus had. Round two. Next on Wretched Radio.
Marriage and parenting. They're not for the faint of heart, and in a fallen world, those sacred callings can feel overwhelming. Maybe you're just trying to keep your head above water. But here's the truth. Your home wasn't designed just to survive.
But what would it look like for someone to catch sight of your marriage and think, I think it's really, really alive and it's thriving.
Listen to Thrive with Pastor Brad Bigney. Available now on Fortis Plus or your favorite podcast platforms.
We cannot disengage from the battle. And there is a way that you can win a life and rescue a soldier who's about to be executed through abortion. Preborn.org/wretched. Ultrasounds, this is a tangible way to save a life. An ultrasound is $28. 80% of the time, mom chooses life. Want to engage in the battle? Preborn.org/wretched. Preborn.org/wretched.
Hey, hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. You know how everybody's always trying to sell you something? This is different. We're actually giving away more content than most ministries charge for. Maybe you're thinking someone should help keep this going. Well, that someone could be you. Would you pray about becoming an ongoing monthly gospel partner? Just head over to FortisInstitute.org right now and get all of the answers to all of the questions you likely have about becoming an ongoing monthly gospel partner. Wretched, amazing grace. Amazing gospel. For 25 years, we've watched Christianity's place in America change dramatically.
This is Wretched Radio.
But one thing hasn't changed: our commitment to proclaiming God's truth without compromise. A quarter century of preaching the gospel, equipping others to preach the gospel, and strengthening the local church. Together, we've built something extraordinary for the kingdom of God. Visit FortisInstitute.org and join us as we continue this vital work.
Until tomorrow, go serve your King. Perhaps you've been wondering, is there a Christian university that isn't woke or that hasn't compromised on important biblical doctrines like, you know, the age of the earth? There is. It's the Masters University in Southern California. Would you like to learn more? I encourage you to visit the Masters University at masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
You've most likely been there, sitting across from a therapist, staring at their degrees on the wall, listening while they give you a diagnosis and tell you what pill and prescription they think are going to cure all your ills. That's why Dr. Greg Gifford wrote Lies My Therapist Told Me, because sometimes it's not the medication or even the diagnosis that's the real issue. It's that the whole system doesn't touch what's going on beneath the surface. Pre-order Lies My Therapist Told Me today at FortisInstitute.org/lies.
Know your church fathers. John Chrysostom was the bishop of Syria and Constantinople in the 4th century.
He was an eloquent preacher and earned the moniker Chrysostom, which means golden-mouthed. He denounced abuses of authority in church and government and fought for purity of life and doctrine. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Go ahead and tell them, Jimmy. Just go ahead. You just go right ahead.
Tell them what?
You announce the name of round two of...
You be the judge.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Order in the court.
This is not something we would typically share here on Wretched Radio because it seems, at least on the surface, to be downright political, but I think there's something deeper here. I think there's worldview being revealed. And I'm sorry, a full frontal display of the willingness of people who are not godly to lie and to deceive. There's a freshman representative. His name is Brandon Gill. He's investigating the NPR and CEO, or the CEO rather, of NPR. And this is, I have to admit, when I watched this, I was like, oh, dude, you are just trouncing her and revealing her pants are on fire. But I think that it's worth our time because, first of all, the willingness of people to just bald face, that's how it's spelled anyway, bald face lie. Second of all, whether this woman remembers what she's tweeted or not, listen to the worldview that the CEO of NPR holds to. Now, Jimmy, I do have to ask a question before I hit play.
Okay.
Wait a second. Hold on. I'm gonna join Bethel Church for a moment and be a prophet. I've got a word here.
Okay.
You took the title of this sound file that I'm looking at directly from the source where you found it on the internet.
I did.
I can tell. Because here's what it says. Freshman rep Brandon Gill annihilates NPR CEO. Yeah, baby. That's the type of stuff that gets people to watch. Here he is in action.
Do you believe that America is addicted to white supremacy?
I believe that I tweeted that. And as I've said earlier, I believe much of my thinking has evolved over the last half decade.
It has evolved. Why did you tweet that?
I don't recall the exact context, sir, so I wouldn't be able to say.
Oh,
okay. Do you believe that America believes in black plunder and white democracy?
I don't believe that, sir.
You tweeted that in reference to a book you were reading at the time, apparently, The Case for Reparations.
I don't think I've ever read that book, sir.
Oh.
You tweeted about it. You said you took a day off to fully read The Case for Reparations. You put that on Twitter in January of 2020.
Apologies, I don't recall that I did.
One wonders what she does remember.
Okay.
No doubt that your tweet there is correct, but I don't recall that.
Okay.
This is an interesting way to block something. So, Jimmy, you accused me of something that, you know, Todd, back in 2021, you texted that you axe murdered somebody.
I don't remember that.
Well, I just don't remember. You know, I wouldn't argue with you on that, but I just don't remember it. As if to say, so be gone with your accusations that I'm DEI woke to the extreme. By the way, just as an aside, we pay for this woman's salary. We pay for this woman to lead an institution that gets government money to indoctrinate our kids. It would be fascinating. In fact, Jimmy, let's give AI a try.
Okay.
Ask Mr. AI how many programs on PBS, what percentage of programs actually teach reading, writing, or arithmetic? Because if you remember, those shows historically, yeah, there were some values being pushed back then. Sesame Street sort of stuff. They were already pushing the values. But if you could skate a figure eight, it would be great. And conjunction, junction, what's your function? We learned some stuff. Today, I doubt there's any. And I'll bet it is almost all indoctrination. And this is the woman who's leading it.
Do you believe that white people inherently feel superior to other races?
I do not.
You don't. You tweeted something to that effect. You said, I grew up feeling superior. Ha, how white of me. Why did you tweet that?
I think I was probably reflecting on what it was to grow up in an environment where I had lots of advantages.
Advantages we call blessings. And even if you want to use the term advantages, what would be wrong with that? It is only if your advantage comes from your hand of disadvantaging somebody. So the whole language, this woman is thoroughly woke, totally CRT, entirely DEI, and she's willing to simply dismiss it by either flat out lying or just pretending that a lack of memory makes it go away. Jimmy, you find the AI?
It's thinking.
It's thinking.
I had to ask it twice.
Wow.
It sounds like you're saying that white people feel superior.
I don't believe that anybody feels that way, sir. I was just reflecting on my own experiences.
Do you think that white people should pay reparations?
I have never said that, sir.
Yes, you did. You said it in January of 2020. You tweeted.
Oh. And you know what? I don't know who this representative Brandon Gill is who annihilates the woman from NPR.
He's from Texas.
He's a cool cucumber, this guy. Now, this is a tone that is worth... I think this fits very nicely in the range of tones that we can use. He's going after her, but it's not like he's rah, 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 coming at her. But it's effective, isn't it?
Yes, the North. Yes, all of us. Yes, America. Yes, our original collective sin and unpaid debt. Yes, reparations. Yes, on this day.
I don't believe that was a reference to fiscal reparations, sir.
What kind of reparations was it a reference to?
I think it was just a reference to the idea that we all...
You can hear him kind of sniggering.
All owe much to the people who came before us.
That's a bizarre way to frame what you tweeted.
To say the least.
Okay, how much reparations have you personally paid?
Sir, I don't believe that I've ever paid reparations.
You know what'd be great? Everybody seems to be very upset that we might get money back because of Doge. If here's the option, we won't send you the check. We'll just forward it to reparations fund. I wonder how many of these liberals would put their money where their mouths are.
Okay, it's just for everybody else.
I'm not asking anyone.
Seems
to
be what you're suggesting. Do you believe that looting is morally wrong?
I believe that looting is illegal, and I refer to it as counterproductive. I think it should be prosecuted.
Do you believe it's morally wrong, though?
Of course.
Of course. Then why did you refer to it as counterproductive? It's a very different way to describe it.
It is both morally wrong and counterproductive, as well as being
illegal. You tweeted, it's hard to be mad about protests in reference to the BLM protests, not prioritizing the private property of a system of oppression. You didn't condemn the looting. You said that it was counterproductive. NPR also promoted a book called In Defense of Looting. Do you think that that's an appropriate use of taxpayer dollars?
I'm unfamiliar with that book, sir. And I don't believe that was at my time
at NPR. You tweeted that you read that book, but...
I don't believe that I did read that.
What bad worldview. Not the B wrote something exceedingly insightful. Apparently, there is a woman in Ireland who's on a bit of a crusade to make Ireland more diverse. This is from Not the Bee. Imagine a white Englishman from 1780 who says Ireland needs to give up its culture. It should be using English, not Gaelic, in schools. The Englishman thinks the standard of equity and inclusion should be applied across the British Empire, whether Ireland, Kenya, India. Everyone needs to give up their unique culture for the glory of the crown, for the sake of diversity. Can you imagine that happening? But that's the very same argument that is being used. And I thought this revelation from Not the Bee helps us to get that. Quote, from pushing abortion clinics in Africa to funding gender programs in Pakistan to demanding the Irish become more diverse, woke movement is on a mission to destroy indigenous culture and make it look more like them. So the very thing they denounce white people for doing, invading a culture and changing it, they're doing the exact same thing. They're just using a different modus operandi. Quote, diversity is a particularly clever ploy by the woke colonizers. Diversity in general is good, but their kind of diversity means erase your culture to create a vacuum for other cultures to rule over you. It's just been packaged in a way that sounds more palatable to the people being conquered. That is so helpful. The very thing that they denounce, the imposing of a culture on another culture, is precisely what they're doing. from Not the Bee, the woke missionaries don't have a compelling gospel. They have to rely on force. I would say deception and just undermining and guilting and shaming. But they justify it by saying their colonialism hurts the haves, white people, by having the have-nots, non-whites, dictating the terms of the culture. This forceful transfer of power and resources has a name. It's called Marxism. In other words, CRT. It is alive and well, and whilst I'm glad our president is outlawing it from being taught in the schools, it appears that it's happening at NPR. Maybe something that might be an encouragement, Mom or Dad. If your kids are being entertained by PBS, probably not so subtly, they're being indoctrinated to think like a Marxist. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.